Golden West, Season 1, Episode 2. Really, Father, are you going to work the entire way to California? Abigail didn't look up from the tiny gadget as she twisted the tiny screw on the side. Once certain that she'd secured the cover just right, she looked over at her father. Cecil's hands moved swiftly across the paper, a pencil in each hand. The way an image took shape as he sketched and shaded and erased always hypnotized Abigail. Normally she'd sit and stare as he drew, but 5 days into their trip and he still sat silently drawing. She needed to get his attention. Father! Honey, can't you see I'm working? Yes, I can see you're working. I don't know what in the world that is, but how much longer is it going to be until we get to St. Louis? Shouldn't we be there by now? He held his pencil still and looked up and out the window, as if he'd find an answer outside. After looking from Abigail and outside several times, he blinked and shook his head. How long did you say we've been traveling? Honestly, I didn't say how long, but it's been 5 days. We should have come to St. Louis by now. Well, we did make several stops, and we spent at least half a day in Chicago. Perhaps we'll arrive tomorrow. Perhaps. I don't want perhaps. I want to know where we are. Can't you just enjoy the scenery, honey? Not many people get to see America this way. You should feel blessed. Abigail shook her head and muttered to the tiny clockwork butterfly. It would be nice to share it with someone. What's that, honey? He asked, but already both hands were moving across the paper. Even though it annoyed her to no end that her own father wasn't paying attention to her, the drawing looked incredible. He'd gone through at least 7 different designs. None of them seemed quite right, and he'd set it aside. Never did he throw anything out once it had been drawn. Instead, he'd used previous iterations for inspiration for something new. She needed to stretch her legs and find something for them to eat. If she was hungry, then her father would certainly be hungry as well. She nearly tripped over a stack of books sitting on the floor. There were several open on the floor that she needed to step over as well. All of them were based on digging, mining, gold, or machinery. Her father, once he dug into a project, became very single-minded. She'd almost become used to the rattle and sway of the train as it moved down the tracks. She enjoyed her little excursions from their apartment to the lunch car. It gave her time to think of things to build. Her father loved machines, huge and useful. She, on the other hand, preferred to build things as tiny as possible, even if they had no practical use. It was more of a challenge for her. The lunch car, loud and boisterous at this time of day, held a wide array of people. Most ate or drank the day away in the lunch car. Abigail had heard numerous conversations about people's business once they arrived St. Louis. Some were headed to find new jobs, some to start new lives. One couple had just gotten married and had bought land out there. One elderly couple, the most interesting on the train, was headed to see the birth of their latest grandson. "What have you got today?" she asked the bartender. "I say, little miss, you ask the same thing each time you come in here." He reached under the bar and held up 2 clear bottles, each filled with brown liquid. "It's root beer or sarsaparilla for you. Which will it be this time?" "I think I'll go for sarsaparilla, thank you very much." She dropped a nickel on the bar. "Wonderful choice." He held up the nickel. "And thank you, miss." She took a seat next to the window and watched the landscape drift by for a time. Other than fields and small hills, there was almost nothing to look at unless the rare house would happen along. She sipped her beverage and tried to think of what she could do to get her father to come out of the cabin. He'd been working late and sleeping, sitting up, only to wake up in the middle of the night and turn on his light and continue working again. She decided that finishing her beverage and bringing him some food was the best idea. She tipped her bottle, and when she brought it back down, the man in the tight tan suit with brown stripes sat in front of her. She nearly gagged on the mouthful of sweet drink and made her best attempt not to spit it at the man. "I'm sorry to frighten you, miss. I'm terribly sorry. I only must give you fair warning, and I don't feel that I was given the chance back in New York. Have you been on this train the entire time, only to show up now and disturb me? I'll get the conductor. Please, miss, no. I've been hiding from them all this time. I didn't dare come out when I thought they might find me. I figured if I waited long enough, they'd assume I was already a passenger. So, why now? If you've been waiting all this time to talk to me, why wait until now? How can I trust you?" Abigail wished she had a gun, a knife, a screwdriver, anything. Something about the man just wasn't right. Everyone that stood up, or even just shifted in their seat, caught his attention. "Miss, your father, he's in danger." "You said something like that back in New York. I thought you were either crazy or weird." "I'm neither." He twitched to the side to watch a woman fan herself. "How do you know who my father is?" "How do you know who I am?" "I also work for Mr. Huntington. I'm his personal assistant, Mr. Lamone. I don't know your father very well. I've seen the man talk to you in the yard, so I thought you might understand." "Understand what, Mr. Lamone?" Abigail tired of the nonsensical talk of this man. She wished he'd gotten her sarsaparilla and taken it back to the room. Your father, Cecil Chamsky, was picked to build a machine. He was told he was going to be mining for gold, but that's not what he's going to do. He's going to be hunting for something other than gold. Abigail shook her head. If my father said that Mr. Huntington wants him in California mining for gold, then that's what he's going to do. How could you know differently? I'm Mr. Huntington's personal assistant. I was in California. I saw the operation. The man leaned in close and lowered his voice. He's going to be hunting a ghost. Abigail just sat and stared at the man. He couldn't possibly be serious. Sure, she'd heard ghost stories, and many of those stories took place in the Wild West, but there was no reason at all to think that they'd be real. She took a long pull off her drink and set down the nearly empty bottle. The man looked from her to outside to the people sitting in the seats across the aisle. Sir, I don't think you have the right people. Mr. Huntington isn't in the business of sending people across the country looking for specters and spooks. If my father was told he was going to California in order to build gold mining equipment, he's going to build gold mining equipment, nothing else. Something loud banged behind Abigail. She turned to see what the commotion could be. Two men stood up and shouted curses at some unseen person. It was difficult to tell what had happened. She turned back around to talk to the man, but the seat across from her sat empty. A smiling man looked down at her. "Are you almost done, miss? My wife and I would like to have a seat, but I don't want to hurry you." A small disc sat on the table next to her bottle. She picked up both and smiled at the man. "I'm just leaving." Reginald couldn't get out of the dining car fast enough. How could she be on this train? Was her father on board as well? Of course he was on the train. He couldn't send her on alone. But what were those two doing on this train? They'd left New York 2 days before he had. They should have been securing transportation in St. Louis already. Instead, they were on a later train. Their being on the train, though nerve-wracking, wasn't what worried him the most. It was Mr. Huntington's personal assistant, Alexander Lamone. The man had been missing for nearly 6 months. What could he be doing here? The last he'd heard, the man had wandered off into the woods near the old man's gold mine. It was possible that everyone knew the story about how he'd lost his mind and wandered off. So, why now? It was far too much of a coincidence that Chamsky and his kid, Reginald and Mr. Lamone, were all on the same train. Reginald worked his way to the last passenger car and took his seat. Beads of sweat had formed on his brow. He could only be thankful the brat hadn't seen her, or that he hadn't run into Chamsky. How long had they been on the same train together? He tried to put it out of his head. A lady across the aisle frowned at him. "Are you all right, sir? You don't look well. Perhaps you should go to the dining car and get something to eat." "I've been to the dining car, and there's nothing I want. Keep your nose in your own business." "Well, I say, if I didn't know any better, you look like a man that's seen a ghost." "Everyone knows there's no such thing as ghosts, if you don't mind." Reginald turned away and looked out the window. The woman must have been out of her mind suggesting that he'd seen a ghost. Only fools believed in such things. He was a practical man. He believed in steel and steam. Those two things were important in this world because they helped get you along in life, much like this locomotive. It was very likely that Reginald had a hand in building this particular engine. Sadly, it was also likely that Cecil had designed it. How fitting it would be for Cecil to perish on this train, as if Reginald's own hands putting the man to death. That wasn't good enough. There had to be something that brought Cecil down in a dramatic fashion, something that would not only shame him but defame the man. He always came off as so much smarter than everyone else, with his books and drawings and the way he used big words. He never got his hands dirty doing honest work. Then there were men like Lou, who felt the loudest person in the room was the smartest man in the room. It was so nice to be away from him. Finally some freedom, even if he had to deal with people who believed in ghosts. "Would you like some?" Reginald nearly flipped out of his skin. He'd been watching the scenery go by and hadn't even seen the woman with the drink trolley sneak up on him. "No, go away. I was just trying—" "Go try it somewhere else." The last thing he needed right now was someone else trying to get on his last nerve. It didn't matter who she was. He needed to be left alone. It wasn't until he saw her serving a slice of cake and a couple of cookies for the lady across the aisle and her daughter that he realized just how hungry he'd become. He'd been on his way to the dining car to get something to eat. Reginald tugged the lady's apron. "Actually, if you don't mind, I'd love a piece of that cake and perhaps a couple of those cookies. Oh, and do you have any ginger ale?" The trolley maid clicked her tongue on the roof of her mouth. "Well, I've got the cake and the cookies here. I'll have to go to the dining car to get you the ginger ale. It's a long walk, you know. Reginald knew exactly what she meant. He held out a 50-cent piece. It disappeared almost as soon as it had appeared. She pulled the lever on the trolley, and the four cables that suspended it from the ceiling and allowing the trolley to move retracted. She pushed the trolley along the tracks and stored it in the front of the car before exiting to the head of the dining car. Nearly half the cake disappeared in one bite. The little girl across the aisle giggled. Reginald brushed crumbs from his stubble. The trip had been long, and as soon as he got to St. Louis, his second order of business was a shave and a haircut. First was to avoid the Chamskys when he got off the train. That should be easy enough. More difficult would be finding out what Mr. Lamone was doing on the train and where the man could be headed. He didn't have any contacts in California, and he'd used up almost all of his contacts back in New York. He did have one friend he might be able to trust, but other than selling stolen goods, the man had proved useless. Perhaps he'd be able to find Mr. Lamone on the train. He could have the conductor or even the trolley maid keep an eye out for the man. He couldn't exactly hide on the train forever, and that suit he wore made him stand out like a sore thumb. That's what he'd do. The trolley maid returned with a large beer mug filled to the brim with golden liquid. Reginald had expected a bottle of ginger ale. He didn't know there was a soda fountain on the train. He would have ordered a limeade if he'd known that. She handed him the glass, and he had a hold of it. He reached out and grabbed her arm and pulled her in closer. "I have a proposition for you." She slapped him, causing some of the ginger ale to slosh out of the mug. "No, no, no, you misunderstand me." Reginald produced another 50-cent piece. "I need you to keep an eye out for someone, and let me know if you see him and where he is sitting." She snatched the coin from his hand and stashed it in her apron. "Who is it and what does he look like?" Reginald smiled. This was going to be easier than he thought. Time between the train cars, though quite noisy, refreshed Abigail. Something about the clackety-clack of the train as it made its way along. She missed being able to spend time in her lab or even in class. She never thought she'd miss school or the other kids as much as she did. She didn't want to adjust to a new life. She liked things the way they were. Even the men at her father's work she'd miss. Lou, most of all. He'd been almost like a second father to her, helping with little things and even big things from time to time, like helping her build her own lab. Sure, her father had helped with getting the first wall set up, but it was Lou who made it better. There had even been times when she'd come out of her lab crying for some reason or another. Her father would be busy with studying or drawing up plans that he wouldn't notice. Lou always noticed. "Miss, you shouldn't be out here." The lady from the trolley cart, Mrs. Donnington, had a hand on her paper tiara to keep it from flying away. "I'm sorry, I was just getting some fresh air." "Well, you can do that from your cabin. I'm sure your father's worried about you. I just brought him a fresh cart with some tea and biscuits. If you hurry, they're still hot. I even brought a jar of honey as well." Abigail reached into her purse and pulled out a quarter. "Thank you." "Oh, miss, it's quite all right." She didn't accept the tip. "But I suggest you get your father to eat or drink something. I've never seen someone so demanding of themselves. Is he getting enough rest?" "I'll make sure he gets some rest. How long before we're in St. Louis?" "Oh, I'm not the conductor, but I'm sure it'll only be a couple of hours now. Why don't you get back to your cabin? I'd hate to see you get any more coal ash in your hair." Mrs. Donnington brushed some ash from Abigail's hair. As the door shut behind her, Abigail thought she'd gone deaf. The sudden absence of noise did that each time. There was a little ringing in her ears, but she knew it'd go away on its own in a few minutes. She took a second to brush the ash off her clothes before heading to their cabin. She stood with her hand on the door, but she didn't open it. She strained to listen, and unless she was mistaken, heard her father talking to someone. She could only make out one voice, though. Slowly she opened the door. Inside, her father sat in front of a machine with a large horn, and he spoke into the horn. He continued to talk and motioned for her to come into the room. The contraption hadn't been in their room just an hour before when she'd left to go to the dining car, and she was quite certain that her father hadn't built it in that short of time. So it would be best to order twice the amount of steel and triple the number of rivets, along with 5 rolls of burlap, and this should complete the order. Her father stopped the device. "What's that?" "It's amazing, isn't it? It just recorded my voice. When we get to St. Louis, I can give this," he pulled off a brass spindle, "and give it to the telegraph office. They'll send on my words to California so my order can be placed and waiting for us when we arrive. Since I can't send telegraph from the train, this saves me the time of having to give them my order at the telegraph office. Such a wonderful time saver." "That is pretty good, but where did it come from?" "I'd poked my head out to ask the snack lady if there was any way to send a telegraph from the train. I wanted to get my order placed while it was still fresh in my mind. After she recovered from her laughing fit, she suggested that I go to the rear of the train and talk with the crew back there. A fine bunch of fellows. They even offered for me to join their poker game. I would have liked to, but I've got so much work and will be in St. Louis in no time. I needed to make sure to get all of my... Okay, I get it. So you got it from the train crew. Isn't it just a little odd they keep such a thing handy? Well, not at all. A lot of businessmen ride on the train and have need of such a machine. Come on, help me pack up everything. They started rolling papers and stacking books in the trunk. While her father finished with packing up all his things, Abigail started putting her own tools away and storing them inside her own trunk. She was happy to see him up and moving around and not just locked in with his books and drawings. It would be great to finally be off the train again and smell the fresh air. Sure, they'd be in another city, but not for long. Perhaps a night or two, and they'd book passage for the west. She wondered what type of transport they'd be taking on their way out west, and just how long it would take. After all the tools were put away, she picked up her butterfly. She was going to store it in a small box so it didn't get damaged. One of its wings had been bent. Ever so slightly, but indeed it was bent. Abigail frowned. "Father, did you happen to move anything while I was in the dining car?" He scrunched up his brow. "What have you got there?" Cecil took it from her and adjusted his glasses to get a better look. He turned it over and a gear fell out. "Does it fly? This is quite exquisite. Honey, how long have you been doing work like this? I knew you had your little workroom, but I didn't know you were doing things like this in there." Abigail knelt down and picked up the gear. "I've been doing this for quite a while. You've been busy, and I didn't want to disturb you with my little toys and things." She took the butterfly back from her father. Inside, two gears and a screw were missing. She got out her loop, something she'd picked up with her allowance, and looked closer. Scrapes from a tool ran along the bent wing, and several gears also showed small amounts of damage. She could replace them, but this meant that someone had been in their room. After meeting with Mr. Lamone in the dining car, she didn't want to alarm her father. He had a lot on his mind, and once they reached St. Louis, he needed to keep his mind on enough things. She would figure out what had happened. Cecil looked at the gear in her hand. "Did something fall out of it? I must have missed a screw. I'll fix it on the next leg of our journey." She stored the butterfly, loop, and stray gear in a small box and placed them inside her trunk. A bell clanged in the room and a voice sounded over a pipe in the room. "Arriving in St. Louis in 15 minutes. Her father pulled out his watch. "This is one of the reasons I love riding the railroad so much. Always on time. You know, I designed this particular engine. When we arrive, we'll be having lunch with the engineer and some of his crew. I'd love to hear how they like the engine. Maybe I can get ideas for the next one." He looked out the window and got that faraway look in his eyes. "I wonder when I'll be building trains again. Oh, I'm sure this won't be a long-term assignment. How could anyone stay in California so far away from civilization?" "You're right. I'm sure it won't be more than a year. Then we'll be back in New York and getting on with our lives. Hopefully my machine will bring in plenty of gold, and we may even be able to afford a nicer apartment. Wouldn't that be great to have more space?" She thought about that for a moment. It had only ever been the two of them, and even though they took turns using the one bed in the studio apartment. Well, Abigail used the bed most of the time, unless her father actually came home in time to use it. She didn't see anything wrong with having a smaller place. Both of them spent little time there. He'd be in his shop, and she'd be in hers as well. She almost wished they'd get a small house outside of town and be able to do things like a regular father and daughter, like sit down to dinner. They hadn't even done that since they'd left New York, despite her urgings. "I think that'd be nice, Father." He smiled. She liked the way he looked when he smiled. She wanted nothing more than for him to be happy. The brake sounded and stopped as the train started to slow. The first signs of buildings appeared as they made their way into town. Her father told her about the town layout, the position of the train station, some of the better places to eat and shop. He'd apparently learned a lot talking with the train crew. She was glad he decided not to play poker with them, or they'd be sleeping outside and begging for food. "The porters will bring the luggage to our hotel, so don't worry about that. I just need to get this to the telegraph station." He held up the brass spindle. "I hope you don't mind me leaving you on your own for dinner again. I really would like to hear some stories from the engineer." "Go, enjoy yourself. I'm sure we'll have lots of time to talk on the road. We've still got a long way to go, and just think, once we're there, we'll be working together." "Indeed, there'll be more time." She grabbed his head and kissed his forehead. He'd been out the door as they were still slowing down into the station, with a brass spindle in his hand. Abigail straightened her outfit and prepared to also head out into town. As she prepared to leave the room, she spied a piece of fabric in the door jamb, a tan piece of fabric with brown stripes.